You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Rough Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Monday, May 4th, 2015.
Remember, the force will be with you always.
That's right. May the 4th be with you. And it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show, everyone. Glad you could make it. We got plenty to tell you about the next 2 hours here on the Russ Melville Show, including our regular Monday afternoon visit from Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our Cannabis Q&A. We missed Dr. Mitch last week. We had some telecommunications difficulties. But this time, I've got his landline, his cell line, his Skype line. We've got a carrier pigeon that's on its way to Albany, New York right this minute. There's no way we're going to miss Dr. Mitch Earlywine tonight. So if you've got your cannabis questions ready, have them ready for us at half past the hour. We can take them in our chat room, or you can call us live at 844-420-RADIO. That's 844-207-2346. 844-207-2346. Make sure I say it slow enough for everyone to write it down. Also, want to remind everybody that our iPhone app is now out. So on Android and iPhone, you can get the 420 Radio app, the simple app that works like a radio. You turn it on and sound comes out. Also, it contains the archives of the most recent 10 episodes of the Russ Melville Show, just in case you've missed any. So check that out. You can go to 420radio.org/app, or you can go to 420radio.buzz. Either website address will get you there to the download links for the iPhone or the Android version. Also coming up on the show today, we're going to talk about unemployed drug dogs right here in the state of Oregon. That's right, legalization has its consequences, and that means some canine officers are going to have to retire. We'll tell you all about that in Behind the Headlines right after the 420 Radio News. Also on the show today, we're going to do some drug war data mining, some interesting data mining that has really nothing to do with drugs. It has all to do with the roads in Michigan, and we're going to suggest why an idea of taxing pot for potholes could gain some traction there, because God knows the cars can't on those roads in Michigan. Also coming up on the show today, we'll have time for a radical rant. At the end of the show, I'm going to tell you why legalization is not to blame for the recent reductions in medical marijuana in the Pacific Northwest. No matter how much some medical advocates try to make it that way, try to scapegoat giving us our rights to enjoy marijuana, it just ain't so. We'll take a deeper look at that in the radical rant. But like I said, it all starts off with the 420 Radio News. And in the headlines today, the Supreme Court has asked the Obama administration about its opinion on the three states that are suing Colorado for its recreational marijuana law. The governor of Puerto Rico signed an executive order yesterday legalizing medical marijuana in the U.S. territory. We're also going to talk about the state of Illinois and recent additions suggested for its medical marijuana program qualifying conditions. We've got the proponents of medical marijuana in Florida again vowing to bring it to the ballot, since the state legislature seems unwilling or unable to do anything to help the patients in the Sunshine State. And finally, in California, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union has been involved with the steps necessary to legalize marijuana in the Golden State for 2015. All that's coming up, 2016. All that's coming up, I get carried away. I want it to happen right now for everybody. It's all coming up on the Russ Melville Show. Stick around. We'll be right back with the news after these sponsor messages, including My Pottles. Check out mypottles.com for your storage solutions and use the code 420RADIO to get 20% off your order. That's mypottles.com, promo code 420RADIO.
You're tuned into the Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization.
420 Radio is brought to you by Sacred Serum, who is focused on creating elegant and sophisticated cannabis solutions through its line of dispensers and vaporizers that come preloaded with the world's finest cannabis concentrate. Sacred Serum's concentrate is made on pharmaceutical-grade, supercritical CO2 extraction machines that use absolutely no butane or other toxic chemicals. The Vesica, the company's innovative new way to dab and frost, is now available in dispensaries across California. Sacred Serum, elegance and sophistication concentrated.
Oh man, I really dig this tune. You should really check out this groove.
Cool.
Hey, check out more deep cuts like this on my show, Big Daddy Fink's Funky Roller Rink, every Thursday night on 420 Radio.
Funky Roller Rink.
Are you tired of storing your herb in back alley baggies? Then keep your herb fresh and protected with Pottles. Pottles are airtight and odor-free, not to mention they're reusable, BPA-free, and UV-resistant. Pottles come in a variety of sizes, styles, and colors, so go check out Pottles at mypottles.com. Use the code STASH to get an additional 10% off. Again, that's mypottles.com, mypottles.com, and tell them Radical Russ sent ya.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, May 4th, 2015. Today, the United States Supreme Court asked the Solicitor General's office for its opinion in a lawsuit involving three states about the commercial sales of marijuana for recreational use in Colorado. The lawsuit was brought by the state of Nebraska and Oklahoma last December when their attorneys general asked the Supreme Court to rule on the legality of the Colorado's legalized marijuana law in an original jurisdiction case. Nebraska and Oklahoma aren't asking that Colorado now stop personal marijuana use or to go back to its previous laws that prosecuted marijuana use as a crime in the state. Instead, the two states want Colorado's plan disallowed by the Supreme Court that allows for commercial growing and distribution of marijuana within the state. The court typically takes its time with original jurisdiction cases, and at least four justices will need to vote to accept the case for arguments once the Solicitor General's opinion is filed. The governor of Puerto Rico signed an executive order yesterday to permit the use of medical marijuana in the U.S. territory. Governor Alejandro Garcia Padilla said the island's health secretary has 3 months to issue a report detailing how the executive order will be implemented, the impact it will have, and what future steps could be taken. The order went into immediate effect. Garcia said the government will also soon outline the specific authorized uses of marijuana and its derivatives for medical purposes. He noted that medical marijuana is used in the U.S. mainland and elsewhere to treat pain associated with migraines and illnesses including epilepsy, multiple sclerosis, and AIDS. Elsewhere in the Caribbean, Jamaica recently passed a law that partially decriminalized small amounts of pot and paved the way for a lawful medical marijuana sector. Post-traumatic stress, along with migraines and irritable bowel syndrome, have been recommended as additions to the list of conditions that can be treated by medical marijuana in Illinois. Also receiving a recommendation for approval today were osteoarthritis and two forms of nerve damage, including diabetic neuropathy. But diabetes itself, as well as anxiety, did not receive endorsements by a state panel in Chicago. The Illinois Medical Cannabis Advisory Board met today to consider a number of new disorders to add to the list of conditions that qualify someone to get access to medical marijuana. Its recommendations will be passed on to the Illinois Department of Public Health, which will ultimately decide which conditions are added to the list. The recommending board also voted against marijuana to treat the blood disorder essential thrombocythemia, which commonly causes headaches in sufferers. The panel said those who have the disorder would be better served under the migraines category. Proponents of medical marijuana in Florida say they'll be back crisscrossing the state with petitions to put the issue on the 2016 ballot. People United for Medical Marijuana, which is conducting the Citizens Initiative, landed a 58% majority in the November election, coming up just short of the 60% needed for a constitutional amendment. Proponents felt that might provide momentum for legislative action, but not one of the bills addressing wider use of medical marijuana even received a committee hearing in the 2015 Florida legislature. The group said it has addressed some of the loopholes cited by opponents in last year's campaign. The new amendment specifically requires parental consent and states that those eligible for medical marijuana must have debilitating conditions. It requires the Department of Health to establish qualifications and standards for caregivers who will undergo background checks. People United submitted its petition and received approval by the Secretary of State's office in January. The United Food and Commercial Workers Western States Council recently commissioned a series of focus groups where 48 men and women representing a cross-section of Californians filed into rooms with one-way mirrors to share their opinions. The research is aimed at shaping an expected legalization initiative for the 2016 ballot. Though public polls show a growing majority of state voters back the concept of legalizing marijuana, the data underscore the challenges to crafting a measure that can withstand the scrutiny of a multi-million dollar opposition campaign. And in sad news, medical marijuana doctor Phil Levesque, a well-known and somewhat controversial doctor who helped legalize medical marijuana in the state of Oregon, died Saturday afternoon, officials at his care facility said. He was 92 years old. When local news asked him in February how he wants to be remembered, Dr. Levesque was quick with his answer, quote, pot doc, end quote. He feels that people are felt that people were finally catching up to what he's been advocating for years. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, May 4th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org. Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers.
If you're an adult who enjoys a good beer, there's a similar product you might want to know about. One without all the calories and serious health problems. Less toxic, so it doesn't cause hangovers or overdose deaths, and it's not linked to violence or reckless behavior. Marijuana. Less harmful than alcohol, and time to treat it that way. For more information, visit marijuanaissafer.org.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And today I'm looking at a piece that came out in the Washington Post Sunday edition. Fantastic headline reads, "A byproduct of legalized marijuana in Oregon? Unemployed police dogs." Yes, we're very happy about that happening. Yes, yes. Good boy. Good boy. The story by Peter Hawley explains that there's two drug dogs in Medford, Oregon. That would be Southern Oregon. The growing capital of Oregon, kind of the northern tip of the Emerald Triangle, if you will. Two drug dogs named Narc and Cody. Narc, what a shame. Narc is a Belgian Malinois and Cody is a lab mix. Both of them are trained to alert to the presence of drugs. Narc will sit, Cody will freeze in place. And their model employees, according to Sergeant DJ Graham, who oversees the department's canine unit, saying to the Washington Post, quote, "They're both very friendly and both hardworking and have high energy. They're both very focused when it comes to their work, and they work for cheap food and play," end quote. But as marijuana becomes legal on July 1st here in the state of Oregon, they'll also be unemployed. The reason, according to the police, is because the drug-sniffing dogs are used to provide probable cause necessary to initiate a search. If a suspect is carrying a new legal drug like marijuana and an illegal drug like heroin, the dog that provides probable cause after smelling the legal substance could invalidate any arrest for the illegal substance. Now, this is a point I have made time and time again, dating back to Prop 19 in 2010, where I explained it doesn't matter if people would complain, oh, they're only legalizing an ounce. It's just an ounce. And I tried to keep explaining it doesn't matter if you legalize just a gram of marijuana. You've automatically killed the probable cause based on the smell or sight of marijuana crumbs or the smell of marijuana odor. Particularly drug dogs alerting. A drug dog can't smell the difference between a gram, an ounce, or a pound. It doesn't matter. So this has also been borne out in the statistics we've seen in Washington and Colorado since legalization. Not only did those crimes which became legal go away, those possession of less than an ounce, but those crimes that are still crimes, possession of more than an ounce, or in the case of Washington State, home cultivation, prosecution for those went down as well by large degrees. And that, again, is because so many of these cases for the larger amounts, for the home grows, are built on the probable cause that can be gained through the smell of marijuana or the sight of its crumbs or detritus, like, you know, the stems and seeds and leaves and trim and all baggies and high electrical bills and so forth. Once you begin the process of legalization and you end marijuana as contraband, you take one of the most important steps in fighting for the rest of our freedoms. And they're talking about how it's not just Medford, statewide, there are 150 dogs working for various law enforcement agencies, according to the Oregon Police Canine Association. 60 of those dogs are assigned to drug enforcement. That's 60 drug dogs that are going to lose their jobs. Now, some people might think, could you retrain them? Just retrain them to not alert for marijuana. Folks, it doesn't quite work that way. You know, the old adage of you can't teach an old dog new tricks. It's not like trying to teach them a new trick. You're trying to teach them to unlearn a trick they already know. And that's going to be difficult to almost impossible. And even if they did claim to be able to do such a thing, any good defense attorney on cross-examination could get that thrown out of court once the marijuana becomes legal. Now, each one of these dogs, it costs about $12,000 to train one of these drug dogs. So that's the police now are now requesting more money to get replacement dogs. In Medford, where they're losing Cody and Narc, they're requesting $24,000, $12,000 each, to replace Cody and Narc with dogs that only train to alert on heroin, cocaine, and meth, but ignore marijuana. And this is not just in Oregon. We've seen the same story repeated a couple years ago in Washington State and Colorado. I'm sure there will be a story coming out about the Alaska police dogs that are having to be retrained and the Washington, D.C. police dogs that are going to have to be retrained. And with the recent decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that the police can't detain you at a traffic stop any longer than necessary for the traffic stop in order to bring in a drug-sniffing dog, we are getting great news about the use of canines to abrogate our rights as cannabis consumers in this country. It'll be a fine day when dogs are no longer used to go after nonviolent cannabis consumers or drug consumers of any type, but instead reserved for those situations of controlling violent criminals who might be on the run seeking to do harm to the rest of us. That's the best thing I can think of for our police canines.
Yeah, baby! Yeah.
I like some of the suggestions in the chat room. Take these old drug dogs that are being retired, adopt them out, and train them how to identify specific strains. Hey, you know they got dogs that can smell cancer on your breath. You know that, right? Why couldn't we train them to identify different strains? Put them to work for the Marijuana Enforcement Division.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on 420radio.org.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Funky Roller Ring.
What's happening, Groovy Cats? This is your Funk Master of Ceremonies, Big Daddy. And I want you to join me every Thursday night at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, right here at the Funky Roller Ring. Your home of soul, funk, and disco, baby.
Funky-licious.
It's always a party at the Funky Roller Ring.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Support for 420 Radio comes from Kick-Ass Cannabis and Veggies, a guide to gardening with nature, authored by Kip Zonderkopf. Based on the ethos that a living soil is the foundation of a thriving garden, Kick-Ass Cannabis and Veggies is your guide to naturally growing resinous buds and nutrient-rich veggies. Get the ebook now with instant download at kickassorganics.com. Previews available on Amazon, iTunes, Nook, Google Play, Kobo, and many other online retailers.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. And today, the Drug War Data Mines take us to the great state of Michigan. And we're going to take a look at some data that have nothing to do with marijuana whatsoever. It has to do with the roads in Michigan. And something I recall from my travels in the 90s, first time I ever went to Detroit, I was excited that I'd be going to the Motor City. And then once I was out on the roads in my rental car, I was shocked at how bad the roads in a place called the Motor City could possibly be. Worst roads I've ever driven on in my lifetime. And this is reflected in some of the costs that Michiganders are paying due to these bad roads. According to Trip, which is a research firm based in Washington, D.C., and this is a report from the Wall Street Journal, it costs an extra $4.8 billion for Michiganders in extra auto costs per year. $4.8 billion. That works out to $686 per driver just for the bad roads in the form of, well, lower gas mileage that you get, balding tires, cracked windshields, and rapid vehicle depreciation. The Michigan Transport Asset Management Council, which is a state agency, claims that 38% of the state's roads are in a poor condition and projects that in a decade, the figure will jump to 53%. 53%, more than half the roads are poor. Now, the Republican governor in Michigan has proposed a tax hike. Wait a minute. Stop the presses. A Republican proposing a tax hike. That's right. He's proposing a tax hike. He and the GOP-controlled legislature is scheduling a big tax hike called Proposal 1. And Proposal 1 is four changes to the state constitution, plus 8 additional pieces of legislation that would go into effect upon approval. So this is a big, massive, complicated thing. The main parts of it, according to the Wall Street Journal, is to jack up the state sales tax to 7% from its current 6%. So a 1% rise in the sales tax, or proportionally raising the tax by 16 2/3%, right? From 6 to 7% is a raise of 16 point, whatever. You get the point, right? It's going to cost poor people more money because, you know, rich people don't buy proportionally that much more stuff. Sales taxes are always regressive upon the poor. Another tax they were going to boost is the price of gas. They're going to revamp tax collection at the pump and boost vehicle registration fees, right? All things that are disproportionately going to hurt poor people in Michigan. Now, this measure, this Proposal 1, if it works out to what they're predicting, would work up to $2 billion in additional revenue. But only $1.2 billion of that would actually go for the roads. The other $0.8 billion is going to go for schools and local government and other spending, and an expansion of the earned income tax credit. So in other words, the taxpayers are going to get hit with all that extra sales tax, extra vehicle tax, extra gas tax, but not all of that tax is going to go for fixing their roads. And the problem this brings up to me, and keep in mind that we're talking about Michigan, which is a state that's got, you know, it's fairly northern state. It freezes. It's right by the, you know, split by the Great Lakes. So it's got a lot of freezing and thawing, and that cracks the roads up. But consider that other states nearby, like Indiana, Ohio, and Wisconsin. Okay, in Indiana, they spend $339 per capita on their roads. Ohio spends $258 per capita. Wisconsin spends $295 per capita on the roads. Michigan spends $126 per capita. Not only is that lower than the rest of the states near the Great Lakes, that's the lowest in the country. They're spending less on fixing the roads in perpetually freezing and thawing Michigan than someplace like Arizona or something. It's crazy. So they're looking at raising these sales taxes and raising these vehicle fees and raising the gas taxes. And I just got to say, there seems to be a novel solution that would not disproportionately hurt the poor, that wouldn't completely solve the problem by any means, but at least it would go toward fixing the problem. And that is tax pot for potholes. Tax pot for potholes. Legalize marijuana in the state of Michigan, tax it, and with those tax revenues, direct them to go toward fixing the roads. Now, there's no way it's going to generate $1.2 billion a year by doing that. Already in Colorado, they've generated $77 million in Colorado. Colorado's about $5 million in the state. Michigan's close to $10 million. Maybe you generate $140 million, $120 million if you want to be conservative. That's only 1/10 of what this Proposal 1 would generate. But hey, if I'm a driver in Michigan spending an extra $686 a year because of bad roads on fixing my car and low gas mileage and all that, cracked windshields, I'd gladly take a pot tax that would cut that bill by 10%. Hell, legal weed and slightly better roads? It's a win-win!
420 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome!
NARMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pens the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time for our regular weekly dose of medicine. We got Dr. Mitch on the Skype line. How you doing, Mitch?
Having a great day.
Oh, sounding clear as a bell, too. Good to hear from you. Hope everything's good there in Albany. And before we get started, I want to remind folks that if you've got questions for Dr. Mitch Earlywine on cannabis science, culture, history, or health, get into the chat room. It's ready right now. If you go to 420radio.org, click that button that says live chat, and you can log in and chat with the rest of us. Or if you're old-fashioned, you want to call in with the telephone, you can do so on our toll-free line. It's 844-207-2346. That's 84-420-RADIO. But of course, we always start things off by giving Dr. Mitch the first word to tell us what's the latest in cannabis science, Dr. Mitch.
All kinds of wild things with Kevin Sabet playing fast and loose was the truth. This crazy cannabuster device allegedly going to detect marijuana in motorists. Some school drug tests costing more than they're worth. And a crazy Illinois state panel that approved some medical conditions but not others. And finally, the weird legal hemp-based alternative to medical marijuana that has got me kind of spooked.
All right, let's start with that one, because I had some interviews last week with the CEO of Medical Marijuana Inc. and then the following day with one of their representatives. And I tried to quiz them as best I could about the viability of hemp paste. They claim it's a CBD product derived from industrial hemp that, you know, cannabidiol occurs naturally within the stalks. And so we can take this redded hemp from overseas and extract the cannabidiol on it. And at some level, I was a little vexed because I got to thinking, well, you know, cannabidiol is a molecule. It really shouldn't matter where or what it comes from. But I was still a little skeptical about this. So what can you tell us about this?
I'm a little apprehensive myself. So they cite things like, hey, cannabidiol is good for this and cannabidiol is good for that. And all their citations are absolutely right. Where the hole is their product really containing cannabidiol in the first place? And is this redded industrial hemp from some other place necessarily free of the sort of toxins we'd be worried about, because cannabis is such a legendary puller of radioactivity and heavy metals and things like that, if it's not grown for human consumption?
Yeah, I had asked him about that, about the phytoremediative qualities of hemp, and kind of laughed it off, saying, well, we're not growing anywhere near Chernobyl. We're just growing, these are, you know, hemp fields in Europe. But still, I wonder what might be sprayed on those hemp fields in Europe, what might be in the soil there. And then another consideration I had was just pure old-fashioned trust in greed. And that is, if it were so easy and so useful to get CBD out of industrial hemp, why would GW Pharmaceuticals be wasting its time trying to get, you know, clinical trials out of cannabis-based CBD?
Well, the irony is CBD is actually still Schedule 1, despite all kinds of ranting and raving about how it's not. So I wouldn't be surprised if these guys get a cease and desist letter sometime soon. Mm. I'm sure it's good-hearted, and if they're helping some people, that's great. But I do feel like this isn't quite how it was supposed to work with even the CBD alone, only laws.
Yeah, and to that, you know, to the point of cannabidiol being Schedule One, I was talking to their spokesperson saying, look, I'm looking at the DEA website right here where researchers have to apply to the Office of Diversion Control, and here is the code number for cannabidiol. So if a researcher has to go through the DEA to be able to pull this off, how can you guys claim that you don't have to? Very slippery answers on that. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see how this turns out.
Exactly.
Jesus.
Exactly.
All right. Let's get to our good friend, the Joker to my Batman, Kevin Sabet. Because, Dr. Sanjay Gupta came out with his Weed 3 special. And I got to be honest, I haven't seen the Weed 3 special yet. I've been so busy. I'm wondering if you've seen it and what you might have to say about Kevin Sabet's claim that we still have to watch out because marijuana causes schizophrenia.
I liked the Weed 3 special more than I expected to. I have my own issues with Sanjay Gupta, and maybe it's just professional jealousy. It's a little alarmist and a little fast and loose, but not at all inappropriate and very moving. I always am suspicious when the heart-wrenching pictures are up there. But Kevin knows better than this, and I feel like this is the last dying gasp of the prohibitionist dinosaur, if you will. The notion that cannabis causes schizophrenia is completely ridiculous. There's a subset of folks with some genetic risk for psychotic disorders who, if they're heavily involved before age 18, like, it's like this giant set of probabilistic nonsense that if you have all those things at once, then you're more likely to maybe be a little bit weird. You know, and it, every time it replicates, it's a different gene, and each study actually has potential for bias in some work that I've shown. And this idea that we're going to reify, hey, cannabis increases schizophrenia, is just not consistent with epidemiological data. When you look across different countries, the rate of schizophrenia is always just a little bit less than 1%. When you look across different eras, when cannabis was high or low, the rate of schizophrenia is comparable. And as you mentioned in your blog, it's got a lot more to do with prenatal care, genetics, and environment than any single plant. I kind of wish it were this easy to prevent because it would save humanity a lot of cash and a lot of angst, but it's just not the case. It's not true at all.
You know, as I was researching that blog post too, I did find where they mentioned the month you're born has more correlation than whether you use cannabis.
My friend Sarnoff Mednick had a grad student who pulled that off. And basically what happens is if your mom has a genetic risk for psychosis and gets a wild stressor during that second trimester of pregnancy, like the flu, it turns out you're at elevated risk for psychosis. So the folks who basically ended up with those, you know, November, December, January being that second trimester, that's when their moms were more likely to have the flu. And then suddenly, if their moms were already at genetic risk, this was like a special kind of environmental insult and actually increased the probability that they'd develop psychosis.
Hmm. Well, that explains astrology then, doesn't it?
Well, I wouldn't believe that because I'm a Capricorn.
Of course. All right. Let's get to this cannabuster device. This is, they always say we're worried about legalizing marijuana. There's going to be stoned mayhem on the freeways. There's no breathalyzer for pot. Now we got some students who say they can come up with something to detect pot by saliva. What do we have to worry about this one?
My biggest concern is that this is completely off base with the issue. What we want is a roadside sobriety test. Can you ride a unicycle? Can you juggle? Can you walk a straight line? Those are the things that correlate the ability to drive. The notion that you've had cannabis or haven't, or you're above some nanograms per milliliter in your blood or your pee or whatever, that has nothing to do with your competence as a driver. So I would much rather see this money go towards validating a nice roadside sobriety test like the ones we have for alcohol, rather than this perseveration on trying to find some molecule that's going to reveal who is and who isn't impaired.
Mm. You know, Vendikar in our chat room says, damn, Doc, I can't do any of those things sober.
Exactly, and that's the point. I've had alcoholics in treatment who, they don't drive until they're above about 0.04 because otherwise they got the shakes so bad they can't drive.
Wow. All right. Let's get to the subject that's, near and dear is not the right way to put it. Something that's burns in my heart, and that is this school drug testing. Washington Post showing that it's costly, ineffective, and more common than you think. Even the pediatricians are against this, aren't they?
it's wild because we've now had at least two enormous studies suggesting that this just does not help at all. And the anecdotal stories you hear from these principals would make you want to weep, and you think, oh, who wouldn't want to protect the children? But it just comes down to basically driving the kids who need it most away from extracurriculars, and then essentially making these wasteful uses of time so that people are essentially in the bathroom giving up their pee when they could be in school learning something cool.
Yeah, really. Kid, you got a problem. You might have a problem with drugs. Let's make you hang out with all the rest of the kids who don't do extracurriculars, you know, and then let's suspend you from school. And of course, with all that extra time, you'll behave yourself.
Well, and it's funny because we've got new data suggesting that the best buffer against problems, not necessarily against use, is almost any extracurricular. Drama, sports, you know, anything at all, just a few more hours hanging out doing something positive in the school environment helps so much. And to drive folks away from that is absolutely counter to the idea of drug prevention.
All right. For our final story, we covered this in the news today about Illinois. Their cannabis panel recommending marijuana for the treatment of post-traumatic stress and migraines, but not anxiety and diabetes. Any comments on those?
I think the problem here is we don't have a big enough data set to have a universal set of disorders. I'm no fan of cannabis as a first-line treatment for anxiety. You've heard me rant about cognitive behavior therapy before, but I still think it ought to be available. I mean, that's just nuts. And then the diabetes literature, I'll admit, is small, but it's not that much smaller than the PTSD literature. So this inconsistency across different states is partly the result of different physicians being aware of different sets of research, and it really needs to have the opportunity to experiment individually. So lots and lots of doctors can prescribe things off-label to see if they're going to work for certain disorders that might not have been exactly approved for that drug. Why can't cannabis get in that same category?
Why not, indeed? And one quick follow-up from our chat room of one of our chatters pointing out that there was misinterpretation of schizophrenic patients who self-medicated with marijuana. What do we know about that?
Well, what's interesting is, so we had a subset of folks who may have shown some psychotic features prior to using cannabis, and we actually have data to suggest cannabidiol does decrease some of the magical ideation and more stereotypically psychotic symptoms. And I have a kind of mathematically wonky paper out that basically shows that some of these psychosis scales are actually biased against cannabis users, because one of the items is something like, I use words in strange and unusual ways, and anybody who's kicked back at 420 with their homies with the chronic, of course, thinks they've used words in strange and unusual ways. It's not about being psychotic, it's about being part of our culture.
Well, man, that's totally dope, Daddy-O. Folks, that's all the time we got for our cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch. But again, if you want to get your question in private, on the down low, don't want anybody else to hear about it, you can always send it to Dr. Mitch directly by emailing 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. Dr. Mitch, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
All right, when we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant. Legalization is not to blame for the Pacific Northwest medical marijuana reductions. We'll tell you why when we come back.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, the activist radio station. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
And now, a message from former President George W. Bush
to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no, it's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. And I start to fly if I said some silly thing, and that's the reason why.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
Up here in the Pacific Northwest, medical marijuana supporters are up in arms about recent legislation that aims to curtail and even eliminate some portions of the medical marijuana laws that have existed since 1998. And they're blaming these changes, mistakenly, on marijuana legalization for all adults. First off, let's review the changes. In Washington State, a new voluntary patient registry was created. Only Washington had gone without some form of patient registry all this time. California and Maine are voluntary, and the rest are mandatory. And registration in some states can cost as much as $200. Washington's card will cost $1. If registered, a patient can purchase and possess up to 3 ounces of usable marijuana. Now, that's down from 24 ounces. And can home grow up to 6 plants, but that's down from 15. They can also form cooperative grows of up to 4 patients, that's down from 10, who may cultivate 60 plants, and that's up from 45. Unregistered patients, however, will be allowed just 1 ounce, just like personal adult use consumers, and those patients will be allowed to home grow 4 plants, unlike personal adult use consumers whose home grow rights aren't yet recognized by legalization. Most troubling to Washington patient advocates is that the plethora of unregulated, unlicensed, uninspected, tax-free medical marijuana dispensaries will be shuttered, and patients will have to shop in the same regulated, licensed, inspected, taxed marijuana stores as everyone else. A new designation of a medically endorsed store is created, requiring those stores to carry some medical-only products, you know, CBD salves, for instance, you know, to train their employees on medical advising and allowing those stores to give medicine for free to qualified patients. Worst of all, a patient card only gives patients a break on the sales taxes, but not the excise taxes. And those are expected to be 30 or 37%, depending on which taxation bill survives in Olympia. In Oregon, it looks as though our changes will be far less draconian, and in some cases, an improvement. Patients will still be able to cultivate 6 mature plants, but no longer will the state count how many immature plants are cultivated. The definition of mature becomes botanically accurate, a plant with buds. Instead of our stupid current law that says a plant over 12 inches tall is mature. And no longer will we care how much usable marijuana a patient possesses at home or the grow site. But what has advocates in Oregon upset are the changes to multi-patient grow sites. Currently, we have what are called card-stacked gardens. A patient can designate a grower who can cultivate those six mature plants for the patient. A grower can cultivate for up to four patients. Many growers can cultivate on the same land. Multiply six plants times four patients times X number of growers, and soon we had marijuana farms, mostly outdoors, producing monster 15-foot plants that produce pounds of usable marijuana each. Now, the Oregon proposal is to limit the current grow sites within city limits to 24 mature plants, and those in rural areas to 96. A new four-year residency requirement to become a grower is proposed, though it may be unconstitutional, and the new grow sites would be limited to just 12 mature plants in the city and 48 mature plants in the country. There are also proposals to require record keeping and inspections for any growers cultivating for others, and the most recent proposal requires that those records are kept for 2 years. Now, these proposals in Oregon are all still within the legislative committee, and they could change. But some form of these changes is expected to pass and be signed into law by the Oregon governor soon. Now, these new limits move Washington from having the greatest possession amounts allowed nationwide to the fourth greatest nationwide. And from the greatest plant amounts allowed to the second greatest number of plants allowed. And from having a Colorado-like amount of untaxed dispensaries to more like a Nevada-like amount of taxed dispensaries. And these new limits in Oregon would still leave Oregon with by far the most generous medical marijuana program outside California. Now, those limits probably don't seem so bad if you're listening to me in Idaho or Oklahoma or even some of the more restrictive medical marijuana states, which since 2010 forbid most or all home grows or forbid any smokable marijuana at all. But if you're a patient in severe need, accustomed to easy access, low cost, and abundant supply, these changes are devastating. And to those points, I sympathize and support the medical advocates' complaints. However, what I can't abide is medical marijuana advocates in both these states blaming these reductions and limitations on the legalization of personal adult use in both these states. In both states, medical advocates object that both Washington's I-502 and Oregon's Measure 91 specifically campaigned that they would not change medical marijuana in any way. In that sense, medical advocates can't complain, because there is not a single word within either of those measures that mandates the changes being proposed. In Oregon's measure, the language even specifically says, "This act may not be construed to amend or affect in any way the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act." The reason why those campaigns pointedly avoided dealing with medical marijuana was that the medical advocates screamed that legalization better not touch medical in any way. So legalization didn't, which killed the opportunity, especially in Washington, for the new law to take medical into account, include it within the new regime, and provide statutory protections for it. With medical marijuana unmentioned, new, strictly regulated legalization regimes were created, which shined a spotlight on how loosely regulated medical marijuana had become in comparison. It wasn't Washington's I-502 that was setting up tents at the Seattle Hemp Fest with naturopaths offering medical marijuana recommendations to anyone who walked in with $200 and a story. It wasn't I-502 that was creatively interpreting loopholes in caregiver language in collective gardens to promulgate dispensaries that were clearly not intended by the medical marijuana law. It wasn't Oregon's Measure 91 that was opening up medical dispensaries called Wake and Bake, with its owners on the front page of the paper, pictured with a 6-foot bong. Or dispensaries called Club Pitbull, brought to you by Stony Girl, before dispensaries were even declared legal. It wasn't Measure 91 that was establishing mega growers who tell the media that they pay their employees in weed. It wasn't Measure 91 that was setting up 624 plant Oregon gardens, purportedly serving 104 patients who all live in Southern California. It wasn't the legalization campaigns that were shipping excess medical marijuana by the trunkload to destinations east. In other words, to believe that medical marijuana was going to continue unchanged if legalization efforts failed in Washington and Oregon is to blissfully ignore the medical marijuana abuses that had become exceedingly obvious to the general public. In fact, had legalization failed in Washington and again in Oregon, there would have been even more political will to make these changes, as legislators would have sensed an electorate wary of marijuana freedom. So now, with legalization on the table, medical marijuana has to evolve. No system of commercial pot shops and grows are going to survive when someone for $200 can buy a permission slip to gain entry to thrice as many untaxed medical shops selling at half the price. No system that requires testing of personal use pot, but not medical pot, can be considered logical. No set of commercial growers facing the costs of licensing, inspections, and taxes can compete with medical growers whose only hurdle is getting a patient's permission. It's not legalization, however, that's causing the problem. It's the lack of regulation and control in medical. Case in point, Colorado. The Centennial State has avoided much of the upheaval being suffered in the Pacific Northwest, mainly because its medical program was already tightly regulated. Patients had been kept to just 3 mature plants and 2 ounces of possession. So legalizing 3 mature plants and 1 ounce for all adults didn't create such a glaring disparity. And even though a Colorado red card costs just $15 and is somewhat easy to acquire, granting access to the medical system that is far lower prices, there isn't that perception of abuse of the system in Colorado as there is in the West. Both Oregon and Washington began their medical marijuana programs with a small amount of possession and plants, just like Colorado. Oregon originally allowed just 3 mature plants and an ounce. Washington originally allowed a vague 60-day supply. Medical advocates complained that since the medical laws provided for no dispensaries, those limits were too low. The states responded by increasing the limits in Oregon to 6 mature plants and 24 ounces, while Washington decided a 60-day supply was 15 plants and 24 ounces. And even then, some patient advocates in Washington were complaining about those limits and were defending up to 70 plants per patient as reasonable. But then when the dispensaries began to appear in Washington and Oregon, nobody ever recognized that the reason medical advocates gave for needing increased limits had now vanished. Now medical advocates had their cake and got to eat it too. Soon enough, the increased limits and the unregulated dispensaries were known more for the abuses they fostered than the seriously sick and disabled people they were intended for. So as legalization progresses into the 2016 election, and the medical marijuana states of California, Massachusetts, Maine, Vermont, and Rhode Island are on deck, medical advocates, especially in California, would be wise to take the opportunity of a new legalization initiative to carefully consider how to include medical marijuana protections within those initiatives. Promising that medical marijuana shall never change, while offering zero language to include medical marijuana within legalization, doesn't seem to be possible so long as state legislatures exist. Well, folks, that's all the time we got for today. Time flies when you legalize. That's my radical rant, and the text version of that should be up on High Times tomorrow afternoon. Check out hightimes.com for my Tuesday and Friday regular column, The Radical Rant. A lot of what you hear here ends up there. That's all the time we got for today. Thanks for joining us in Hour 1. Stay tuned for Hour 2. Toker Talk Radio is coming up next. We'll take your calls at 84-420-RADIO. We got plenty more to talk about in the news today. including a Republican who says pot enhances psychosis and DARE being fooled by The Onion.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
For everyone here at Roller J Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, may the 4th be with you. And take care of each other, tokers.